This is a podcast from WILL AM 580. To support our station, please visit www.willpledge.org. That's www.willpledge.org.
This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast. For Thursday, August 7th, I'm Jeff Bossert. Coming up, part two in a series on Springfield's race riots of 100 years ago. And we'll have a look at your AM 580 weather forecast for Champaign-Urbana, but first, today's news. Illinois U.S. Senator Barack Obama made a surprise visit yesterday to Northwest Indiana, and the presumed Democratic presidential nominee brought along a friend, as Michael Puente reports.
Obama was all smiles when he visited Shoup's Hamburger Shop in Portage, Indiana. He shared the spotlight with Hoosier favorite Indiana U.S. Senator Evan Bayh. One customer asked Obama the question, will Bayh be his running mate?
Evan Bayh is the senator of Indiana. I haven't made a decision about VP yet. All right?
Obama continued to work the crowd, as did Bayh.
It's flattering to be a subject of speculation, but the main thing is to help him lead this country in a better direction.
With that, both Obama and Bayh left Portage, but not without a sack full of burgers from Shoup's restaurant. I'm Michael Puente.
Governor Rob Blagojevich is accusing state lawmakers of stonewalling his statewide construction program. He even took a swipe at Chicago Mayor Richard Daley yesterday. Blagojevich said it's time Daley pitches in and comes off the sidelines in the well-publicized feud the governor is having with Democratic House Speaker Michael Madigan. Besides challenging Daley, Blagojevich also may have increased friction with lawmakers by announcing his first rewrite of what could turn out to be dozens of bills. The action could wind up killing a health care measure for college students. As for the capital plan, Blagojevich said he would try to talk to Daley about getting his help when the mayor returns next week from the Beijing Olympics. The governor says Chicago stands to gain with the capital plan because money to fix infrastructure would strengthen the city's own Olympic bid. Champaign Senator Mike Frerich says he has yet to see Governor Rob Blagojevich's proposals behind a two-day special legislative session. But the Democrat says it's unlikely anything will be accomplished next week other than the governor blaming lawmakers for a lack of action. Frerich says it's unrealistic to expect issues as broad as education funding and road construction to be settled in 2 days. However, the senator says he'll take time to review a revamped revenue plan that abandons gaming expansion and relies on a partial lease of the state lottery.
I want to look at his proposal and see how it benefits East Central Illinois, look and see what kind of controls are in place to make sure that money is not misspent or that it's not going to special friends and contributors. But I know the capital plan is something the state needs, and so that's something I'll look seriously at.
Frerich says he doesn't understand how the governor can tell operators of state parks and substance abuse facilities that they must cut their budgets but will still find the money available to build roads and schools. Republican Senator Dan Rutherford also says that next week is unlikely to produce results, saying the governor is trying to address too much in too little time. Like Frerich's, Rutherford says the $25 billion plan lacks specifics. Illinois' drinking water contains small amounts of pharmaceuticals, but the state's Environmental Protection Agency says there is no health risk, as Sean Crawford explains.
The chemicals range from what's found in over-the-counter drugs like pain relievers to prescription medications such as antidepressants. They wind up in the water supply either after passing through an individual or being poured down the drain. The state of Illinois' first-ever testing for the chemicals shows dozens are present in drinking water, but none reach levels where they would be harmful. That's according to EPA spokesperson Maggie Carson. She says even so, the public should still be aware.
As we baby boomers age, we can see the possibility of increased amounts of pharmaceuticals and increased numbers.
The issue of pharmaceuticals in drinking water has made headlines recently after several published reports. However, towns are not required to monitor those chemicals in their water supplies, and there are no federal standards. Carson says proper disposal of pharmaceuticals will help reduce the levels, including taking unwanted medications to household hazardous waste drop-off sites. I'm Sean Crawford.
Health department officials in Vermilion County, Illinois, are happy about the lowest teen birth rate in at least 38 years, but they're not satisfied. State figures for 2006 say just over 14% of all the births in the county were to women aged 19 and or under. That's the lowest level since state records were first kept, and Vermilion County is no longer among the top 10 counties in the state in teen births. County Health Department educator Linda Bolton says the achievement is no excuse to let up on prevention efforts.
Whether the numbers are up or the numbers are down, teen births cost the community money. They cost us lives in the sense that babies are at greater risk if they're born to teen moms. The teen moms themselves stand to face a more challenging economic and social future.
Bolden says there's only one full-time health educator in the county to train schools on how to help prevent teen pregnancy, but she says parents also need to be encouraged to talk with their children about sexuality, and young people need help focusing on constructive goals. Champaign-Urbana's Public Health District wants to give more of its clients access to fresh produce. Low-income families eligible for the WIC or Women, Infants, and Children program receive vouchers that can be redeemed at local farmers markets. Last year, about half of the vouchers, or nearly $20,000 worth, weren't used. CUPHD says because of transportation and schedule issues, some clients simply couldn't get to Urbana's market on the square on Saturdays or three others held in the area. Today, Public Health is holding its own farmers market by its offices in Champaign. COPHD, the district's Nicole Wente, says the event will help clients who are already on site purchase fruits and vegetables. She says Public Health can also help out non-English-speaking clients.
When we send them over to the market at the square or somewhere else and say, you know, you have these little things to use, go take them over there and use them. And if they don't exactly know what they're needing to get and if that farmer can't communicate or they can't communicate with that farmer, that transaction's not going to go through and their coupons aren't going to be used.
The farmer's market is open to anyone in the community. A couple of area farmers will sell produce. Wente says it's yet to be determined whether the market will be a regular event and if more vendors can be recruited. CUPHD is patterning its farmer's market after one in Kankakee County. Wente says growers there are making good money on redemption of the vouchers. The farmer's market runs from 9 to 1 today at 201 West Kenyon Road in Champaign. For the latest newscast online, go to will.illinois.edu/news. This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast. I'm Jeff Bossert. Springfield's race riot of 1908 took a toll on race relations in the land of Lincoln. The riot started after two black men were sent to the county jail on allegations of crimes against whites. A mob formed seeking vigilante justice against the men, and chaos spread like wildfire. The then governor of Illinois called in National Guard troops to quell the destruction, but not before two black men were lynched. Black-owned businesses were burned to the ground and several whites were killed in the crossfire. Years later, scholars in the capital city pieced together firsthand accounts from the riot. Jenna Dooley has more with the man who spearheaded those conversations.
Well, I have to confess that I was part of a trend of among younger historians in this country who felt strongly that too much history had been about powerful white males. And so in the 1970s, coming to a university like Sangamon State, I had the opportunity to push the limits a little bit and experiment with teaching new subjects such as African-American history, women's history, the history of violence. All of these were fashionable subjects in the turbulent 1960s and 1970s, and they found a very comfortable place here at a brand new innovative university. So it all started innocently, and then I discovered, to my amazement as a professional historian, that there had been a race riot here in 1908, which is described in some of the good history books. But it seemed an unknown event in Springfield's own self-conscious history. And that really puzzled and, in fact, disturbed me. So in a number of initiatives, I and other people on campus and in the community tried to begin telling the story, promoting the study of the story, and publicizing it.
Was there a common sentiment, a common theme, common frustrations that came out of the bulk of the interviews that was just undeniable that you knew you had to go with?
Well, one of them was the obvious surprise among citizens, particularly white citizens, that they'd been living in this city for 20, 30, 40 years and they knew nothing about this event, which by any reasonable historical measure was the most significant event in Springfield's history. Not the most significant personality, that's a guy named Lincoln, But the most significant community event, it was an ugly event, but it was significant. And they were puzzled, and I was deeply puzzled, that it had been, in effect, repressed, consciously or subconsciously, for some 60 years. One of the other really interesting themes that came to me as I either interviewed people or more commonly gave talks about the race riot, illustrated lectures about the race riot all over town, was the number of white people who came up to me later and said they were amazed to hear this, and they now remembered that an uncle or their parents or a grandparent had taken pity on black refugees the weekend of the rioting and offered them sanctuary in their homes. Now, this is a lovely story, and I was heartened by it, but I was offered that gratuitously. That is to say, I didn't ask for the information. They just came up to me afterwards and told me. I began to think there was an interesting social psychological element in all that, which is a form of explaining how a white family could, in all conscience, talk about a race riot that had come to their community without claiming, and perhaps properly, that their family had been an exception to the rule.
So there was a large sense of, now I know, and then a denial still?
I guess you'd call it denial, or at least an effort to rationalize their ancestors' presence in the community during the riot, when it's known by eyewitnesses that thousands of people, either directly or as spectators, took part in the rioting. And so I didn't want to challenge those people to say, I think you're lying. But I found it to be a fascinating characteristic of how a community deals with tragedy in its past.
You might be, you know, in a position to best perhaps analyze where we are now. And I was wondering if you feel that that is, you know, because now you said people are asking you for your opinion, and, you know, you haven't been directly, you know, researching things for several years now, but almost more than people who just, you know it from a passing history. Where are we now in 2008?
Springfield is an immensely better city today in race relations than it was in 1908. But it is far, very far from being a really good city. I don't care what the civic authorities say, there is no doubt in my mind that there is strong racism within the police and fire departments of our city and among the administration of our city. It's a more subtle form of racism, but it's racism. So we have made progress. Maybe the lesson of the race riot has taken some sort of hold, but this city is no paragon of race relations virtue by any means.
Is there any fear that the 100 years seems like a logical peak? Okay, we acknowledge it, and then now we can forget?
I think that'll happen. I mean, that's the cynic in me, but there are not going to be events next year anywhere close to the commemorative events this year. It takes a centennial to achieve that. And so there's no doubt in my mind that the race riot will move off of the radar screen next year. But I'd like to think that the markers properly repositioned and whatever publications also surface and or documentaries will keep this a more visible part of our community past than it has been.
Tomorrow, hear about where Springfield stands today in terms of race relations as we continue this three-part series. In the forecast for the region, mostly sunny skies today, the high around 85. Mostly clear tonight, the low around 58. Sunny skies tomorrow, the high around 82. Friday evening, mostly clear, the low around 58. Mostly sunny Saturday with highs around 82, partly cloudy Saturday night through Monday with lows in the lower 60s, highs around 82. This has been the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Thursday, August 7th. You can find podcasts of Focus 580, the afternoon magazine, agricultural programming, as well as other helpful information at our website, will.illinois.edu. I'm Jeff Bossert, AM 580 News.